My name is John Wesley Farrow. It is the 18th day of April in 2013. I am conducting an oral history interview with my father, Kenneth Ray Farrow. I am in Lubbock, Texas, and he is in Bullard, Texas. We're conducting the interview through the phone. The interview should last 30 to 45 minutes. And it's just going to be a basic question and answer interview. So let's begin. Mr. Farrow, could you state your name and your age?
Kenneth Farrow.
I'm sorry?
Kenneth Farrow.
Okay. What's your age?
59.
Okay. Next question. What was your age when you first entered into the military, and what branch of service did you enter into?
I was 18 years old, and I went into the Navy.
Okay. So what were the deciding factors in your decision to join the Navy? And also, what year did you join?
I joined in August of 1972, and I had been taught all my life that you needed to pay your country back for all the things it had done for you, and I was very patriotic, and I thought that was the right thing to do, so I joined the Navy.
Okay. So what was your opinion of the draft?
Then or now?
Well, you can...
The draft was a necessary evil. It was necessary back in during Vietnam. When I joined, I believe the draft had already stopped. But nowadays, we have an all-voluntary force, and it's working quite well. So, but in time of war, we may eventually have to go back to the draft. I don't know.
Okay. So what were the opinions of your peers during the war of the draft, military or otherwise?
Where I grew up in a small town in East Texas, the anti-war movement really never hit there. I came from a small town, and most everyone there understood about patriotism. They knew going in the military was the right thing to do for the majority of people.
Okay, I just want to add. Did you ever know anyone that was involved in the anti-war movement, or anyone that wasn't too keen on being drafted?
Yes, I knew several people that didn't want to be drafted. They were reluctant to go, but they went anyway. Any war people, like I said, we didn't see too many of them where I was at in East Texas. Now, once I got away from East Texas and the bigger cities like Dallas and different places like that, yeah, I ran into quite a few of them, and a lot of the times the visits weren't very pleasant.
And where exactly were you from when you joined the military? What city in Texas?
I lived in Big Sandy, Texas, in Northeast Texas, and I went in the military in Longview, Texas.
Okay. Was it a pretty easy process signing up for the military? Did you have to go through too many hurdles or anything like that? What did the process look like?
No, it was pretty easy back then. Okay. It was, if you had to want to, they would put you in the military. It didn't take very long.
Do you have any family members who were members of the military?
Yeah, your granddad was World War II. Okay. You had a great uncle that was in the Army, and I had an uncle that was in the Navy. And your mom and your aunt both worked in the shipyard during World War II. But yeah, we had a long line of people that were in the military in our family.
Okay. Did you say that your mother worked in the shipyard?
Yes. Her and her sister both.
Huh. Do you know exactly what she did and where exactly she was when she worked in the shipyard?
Yeah, they were in Houston, and they were both were welders.
Okay. What were the dates of your service history in total? Do you remember?
Yeah, I joined in August of 1972, and my enlistment was up in August of 1975, and then back in September of 1986, I rejoined the reserves. And I stayed in there till December the 7th, 2003.
So why did you join the Navy and not the Army or the Marines or the Coast Guard or so on and so forth? What was appealing about the Navy to you?
Well, I had an uncle that I was real close to that was in the Navy, and he swayed me, you know.
Did that decision have anything to do with the Army and military being taking a more proactive role in the actual fighting of the war?
Oh no! I had made up my mind a long time before that I wanted to go in the Navy. I just thought that would be the best place for me. That doesn't mean though that I didn't have a lot of respect for those Army guys. I remember sitting at home when I was a kid back in 67 and 68 and 69 and watch convoy after convoy after convoy come by the house of people going to Vietnam, you know? And I thought to myself, well, I tell you, one day I'm going to be doing that, one day. But I had made up my mind to go in the Navy, and that's what I did.
So just, I want you now to kind of take me through those... the initial few months after signing the paper and going to boot camp, what was kind of your reaction to all of that? You know, how did things change for you after joining?
Well, it's entering boot camp's quite an experience, and the best way I could describe it, I was just in shock for about the first 2 weeks. And quite honestly, my life changed forever within a short few weeks there. Everything about my life changed. You know, in boot camp, they take away your identity. When you go there, you're not an individual anymore. You're part of a team, and they want you to think that way. There's normally 76 to 80 people in a company in boot camp, and they want everybody to think exactly the same way. You know, that's the way they have to train you. And quite honestly, it was a eye opener for me. I was very immature when I went in the military, and just a few short months later, I had grown up. I knew the difference between right and wrong, and what it's going to take to survive. You know, so it made a huge difference in my life.
I just want to ask, how well. You know, was there a fear of, you know, did you actually think that you would have to go over to Vietnam during the war, or did you kind of know things were kind of winding down? Because in 72 and by the time that you joined the military, Nixon was already in office, and he kind of started this program of Vietnamization. Which kind of what it did actually was putting the power into the South Vietnamese hands so they could, you know, learn how to fight, and we were withdrawing a whole bunch of troops out at this time. Did you know the history, and did you know what was going on currently in Vietnam before you joined, or was it kind of you just wanted to fight for your country and be involved, that type of thing?
Now, quite honestly, I didn't know as much as I should have when I went in. I just knew I had to go in the military and do what I could. Information wasn't the best in the military. They didn't share a lot of information with you. And yes, they were drawing down troops in 72, but there were still a lot of people over there, and there were still a lot of people going there, you know. So I didn't know a lot about Vietnam and why everything was going on, but I started finding out little things here and there. Did it change my willingness to go? No. No. I knew I had to be there in case I was needed.
So how thirsty were you for information about the war while you were in the Navy during the war?
The first couple of years, I was pretty thirsty for it. But after that, and when things were winding down and changing so rapidly, and the apathy was off the scale, and there wasn't any discipline in the military anymore, you know, it got bad there for a while. The last year or so I was in the military, the apathy was rampant. Drugs were rampant. Apathy was rampant. You know, people just weren't out. They wanted to go home. They wanted to forget about it.
I just want to ask this question. It kind of brought something to mind. How well did you know the leadership of the Navy and kind of like the hierarchy of how everything was set up at that time? Because I know that there was a change in leadership right around 68 or 69. There was a new admiral that took over. Were you familiar with any of this?
Admiral Zumwalt.
Right, that's specifically, yeah, who I'm talking about.
Let's just say Admiral Zumwalt wasn't the best admiral. I didn't think he was the best admiral in the world. He lacked a lot of discipline. The discipline in the Navy, and I'm talking strictly about the Navy, it went way downhill when he took over. You know, the dress codes were bad. The core values weren't taught anymore. You know, the Navy has a core value that you have to live by, and they're very strict and they're very stringent. Well, we didn't do it when he was in there. You know?
Did your peers feel the same way?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Drugs were rampant. Apathy was almost expected. I mean, nobody cared. Nobody cared anymore. They just wanted the hell out. That's all. They wanted to go and forget about what happened to them. You know?
What do you mean by that? Could you elaborate on forgetting what happened to them?
Well, they wanted to. Oh man, where are we at here on these questions?
I think we've deviated a little bit. We're talking about Admiral Zumwalt and
the leadership,
right?
Yeah.
And how his kind of new style, he was, you know, compared to every other admiral in the history of the U.S. Navy, he was fairly liberal and he did a lot to change.
Yeah, he was very, very liberal. People had been so burnt out on the Vietnam War, it was just like they were doing this for nothing. They had done figured out we were losing, we were going to lose, you know. Things weren't working out for them. They were getting spit on in airports. They were getting called baby killers. They didn't care. They just wanted to get out and go and get away from it. That's all they wanted to do, you know. And Admiral Zumwalt, he was a very liberal admiral, and things changed for the worse. And what the thing that I remember the most when I got out on my first enlistment in August of 1975, I remember how people just didn't care anymore. They could care less whether you were going on or what you were doing. They just wanted out themselves. You know, they were so tired of it, you know.
Okay, just kind of getting back to the script a little bit. obviously, you didn't serve in combat, and I believe that you said earlier in our conversation that wasn't recorded that you served in the country, in the Navy. Could you run me through a few of the cities and the bases and kind of what your job was in country during the war?
Oh yeah, I was stationed stateside all the time. I did my basic training in Orlando, Florida, and ironically, my records were sent to Great Lakes, Illinois, and I didn't get paid for about the first 3 months I was in the Navy, so it was a little tough there. After I got out of basic training, I went to Millington, Tennessee for school, and then my first real duty station, I was attached to a reconnaissance squadron in Albany, Georgia. And from there, we moved to Key West, Florida. And then I was transferred to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba for a few short months. And then I went to school in Mayport, several different towns, Mayport, Florida. And then back to Key West, Florida, where I was discharged from the Navy in August of 1975.
You mentioned something about school. Could you describe or at least tell me the title of what you're going to school for?
Yeah, most of the aviation people went to Millington, Tennessee for training. That's where their A schools and their C schools and the different levels of schools that you went to. That's where they were located at. Mine was a fleet prep school, what it was. It prepared you basically for what to expect in the fleet, all the different ships and the nomenclature and everything like that is what that did right there.
That kind of leads me up to my next question. So if you were needed in the war, how well prepared do you think you were to serve in a combat unit after all of the training? If you could add on emotionally and physically and mentally prepared, how well do you think?
Physically, emotionally, and mentally, I think I was 100% ready to go. I was ready. I couldn't say the unit that I was with would have been ready, but I was. You know? Now, if I had been chosen to go and went, it might have been a different story when I got there. You know?
Next question. Just describe a typical day for you. As the war's going on and you're training, you know, what was a typical day after all of the school and all of the training was over with?
When I finally got to my first duty station in Albany, Georgia, I was a ground support equipment technician. In other words, we took care of all the stuff that services the aircraft before they fly, you know, like the hydraulic generators and electric generators and the jacks they use to jack up the aircraft to change the wheels and work on them and everything. That's what we did, was prepare that stuff. And most of our time was spent in our shop repairing and making equipment ready to be deployed to Vietnam or on board ship. Okay? And what we would have to do is get a certain amount of each type of equipment ready that it could be shipped and put on an aircraft carrier so they would have it for the planes, you know, to be serviced when the squadrons flew out and were deployed. That's basically what we did. Sometimes the days were easy. Sometimes the days were 18, 20 hours long. We're on a regular basis, you know. So it was hustle and bustle. About the first year after that, it slowed down quite rapidly.
So I'm kind of interested about the kind of the selection process of who goes over and serves on a ship off the coast of Vietnam, or who goes and actually, you know, fights in the rivers and the swamps and stuff like that. What do you did you know anyone from your unit or division or so on that that got the chance to go over there?
Oh yeah, several of them. The Navy does so many different things that you're probably well aware of. You know, they have river boats in Vietnam. They had river boats. They ran reconnaissance squadrons or fighter squadrons and everything like that. And that's what the flying squadrons were the ones that I dealt mostly with. We had a whole fleet of reconnaissance aircraft. They were converted bombers, and they had cameras in them. That's what they did. They took pictures of everything. You know, they were high altitude reconnaissance planes. You know, and that's pretty much in a lot of the squadrons that were based at Albany, Georgia, went numerous times to Vietnam on deployments. So you know, I do a lot of them.
So you're saying that your specific job title is what prevented you from actually going over and serving on a ship or a boat?
Right, I just never was assigned to a ship for ground support equipment or to a squadron. I stayed in a training squadron down in Albany, Georgia for, I don't know, about a year. I was just never needed. I mean, they had plenty of people. They weren't shorthanded or anything like that when they went on, so I just never got assigned to one of them.
Okay.
It wasn't from not trying. I volunteered every chance I got, but it just didn't work out that way. I just wasn't needed.
Right, and that that kind of brings up another question I want to ask. How much power did someone how much did someone with a little power from their parents or whatever could sway the opinion of a board or a person in the Navy from preventing their son to go over and fight in the war? In essence, you know, how were the politics on that?
I know what you're talking about, but I never really ran into any incidents that I knew of myself. I heard stories here and there, you know, that these influential people were able to keep their son or daughter, you know, out of the military by, you know, making sure they were in college or doing this or doing that. I mean, yeah, it happened. It took place.
Well, and kind of what I'm talking about, it may be more specifically in the Army than the Navy, but I know that, you know, there was a big controversy between, you know, the grunts that would actually go out into the fields and fight, and then, you know, the rear echelon people that would, you know, be the clerks or whatnot back at the bases, you know.
I don't doubt for a minute that happened. You know, I don't know of any instances in the Navy where it actually happened that I can remember or anything like that, but I don't doubt it one bit. I'm sure there was a lot of that went on. No.
Okay.
The politics too do play a huge part in war.
This is one of our last questions. I just want to ask if you received any special awards or accommodations during your service.
No, not state that. I didn't. The only thing I got, I had a national defense, and by the time I retired, I ended up with three of those. But I had a National Defense Medal, I had a pistol and rifle expert, and a deployment ribbon. And that's the only thing I really had during my first enlistment. Now, the other one, I had quite a few of them, you know.
Okay. All right, I think that's it. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it. And like I said earlier, this will be uploaded into the Vietnam Center and Texas Tech University oral history database, and will be accessible for many researchers for a long time. So thank you for your contribution.
You're welcome, and I hope I have let you down on this. I hope I've done a good job for you. So.
All right. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome.
Do you have anything else you want to say?
No, we can just leave it at that. We'll do good.
Sounds good. Thank you.